Welcome to the Oregon First Supplementary Board Meeting. It's July 23rd at 9 o'clock, and let's open the meeting. So we have one agenda item today, and it is the adoption of members' redirect rules. So I'll turn it over to you, Stephanie.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Shinoy, members of the board. For the record, Stephanie Vaughn with PERS. Hope you're all doing well. And once again, thank you for accommodating the special rulemaking timeline so that we can accommodate a July 1st implementation. Today we have the adoption of the rules implementing the member redirect portion of Senate Bill 1049. Note that implementation continues. Staff continues to work on implementation. And as we work through the long-term solutions of implementation, you will likely see additional rules pop up here and there for implementation. The rules as presented do include a number of changes as we anticipated. The largest substantive changes relate to earnings crediting. And I'll point just a couple of those out. The first is for annual earnings crediting, which is the 459-007-0005. And what we have done is, in anticipation that the EPSA accounts will be relatively small accounts, and in the first year of administration, the administrative fees would be a little larger. In order to shield the accounts from that impact, or so that the administrative expenses are less impactful to those accounts, we are treating them for administrative purposes according to the relative program. So the EPSA accounts of Tier 1 and Tier 2 members will be treated as Tier 2 funds for administrative expenses, and the EPSA accounts of OPSERP members will be treated as OPSERP pension program funds. The other change with earnings crediting is with death benefits. So the death benefit, the earnings crediting for the EPSA accounts on death. When we noticed the rules, they were directing any excess undistributed or any undistributed excess EPSA account to the IEP retirement installment fund. And after consulting with Milliman and MGO, determined that the EPSA accounts are designated as pension dollars, and we need to keep them on the pension side for the financial reporting. So we've changed that, and any remaining undistributed excess EPSA will remain in the EPSA account and continue to receive earnings in that account until it's distributed. We did receive also public comment from Aruna Masi. She was recommending adding language to the EPSA rules, explaining that the EPSA will be paid out in a lump sum to the member or the member's beneficiary. And we did add that to the EPSA rule as a paragraph 5. All the rest of the changes
just an interruption. That paragraph 5 is on 459-080-0400, correct? The last.
Yes, the very last one. Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
And before you go on, I'm really sorry to interrupt you, but can you dwell a little bit on the excess from the point you made just prior, that the excess funds from the EPSA account, instead of going into the IAP accounts, are treated as pension money and stay in the EPSA account? Can you clarify that just a little bit more?
Sure. We anticipate this is would be only in the event that we have, like, for example, multiple beneficiaries that would be receiving the excess, any excess amount of the EPSA and hasn't requested it. So we process the account when we first process the death benefit, and we would be paying out to the beneficiaries at that time. But if there's any excess, that's what we need to either we were throwing over to the RIF that now we're going to keep in the EPSA account. Milliman and NGO advised that if they're classifying, or we are classifying, the EPSA as pension dollars, And even when they're paid out as a lump sum, they're still pension dollars or still classified as pension dollars. So moving them over to the IEP side would cause issues with the financial reporting. So we don't anticipate actually having, well, actually, I guess it could happen because the rule explains that the EPSA will be applied to the cost of any pension benefit to a beneficiary. So under either Tier 1, Tier 2, a pre-retirement death benefit, or under the OPSERP pre-retirement death benefit for a spouse or former spouse, it will be applied to that first. And then that's where anything that's over any excess after that is applied is what would be paid out to the IEP beneficiary.
And so the reason that there is excess remaining in the EPSA account would be if there are multiple beneficiaries and we are not able to get in touch to them, with them, or the beneficiaries do not want the money at that point in time. What would be examples of there being excess?
So it just like with a IEP benefit right now, yes, if there are multiple beneficiaries, each beneficiary has to apply for the benefit separately. So if we have one beneficiary who applies for the benefit and we pay it out, but the others haven't applied for the benefit yet, we would hold on to that money and it would continue to receive earnings. For the pre-retirement death benefit, we will apply the EPSA the same way that we will apply it to retirement benefits, such that we're applying it only to the cost of the benefits that accrued on and after July 1st, 2020. So we would calculate how much of the benefit is attributable, what the cost of that benefit. If the cost is less than the amount of the EPSA, then we will have an excess amount to be distributed to the beneficiary. As far as pre-retirement death benefits, remember for a OPSERP member, if we have an OPSERP member who's not married and dies pre-retirement, the entire EPSA account will be quote-unquote excess because there is no pre-retirement death benefit. So that's probably the most likely situation where we will have an excess amount to be paid out to beneficiaries.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And I'm actually, I've done. I was about to ask for questions. Does anyone else have any questions? Good timing.
And so the comment that has come from outside Aruna Masri, her entire question has been answered with the addition of that one point in the last room, correct?
Right. Sorry, yes. The public comment she requested that we add to the rule that excess will be paid out to the beneficiary. It's actually in the statute, so we are implementing it that way. But it actually very nicely wraps up that rule as the rule walks through how we will treat the account. It was just, it talks about applying the benefits or applying the EPSA to the benefits accrued on and after 7/1/2020. So it closes that out and explains where that excess goes. So it finishes it off. Fair enough.
Okay.
So we did add it.
And then did that satisfy the party that made the comment, or has there been back and forth with her on that?
No. We generally, when people make public comment, we generally don't respond to them individually. We address either in the rule or we present them to the board and explain how we address them. Yeah. Or if we don't address them, why we don't.
Okay.
Chair Shenoy, this is Lawrence Marshall. If I could ask a question following up on this question you had asked just a moment ago. So if I understand the clarification of keeping the new account on the pension side rather than the IEP side, if there is a payout that ends up going to a beneficiary or their heirs, this that doesn't change
Chair Shinoy, Vice Chair Fernsella, exactly. Yes, it's just a matter of where that account, where the funds will be held until they're distributed.
Got it. Thank you.
Chair Shinoy, I have a question for Stephanie. Stephanie, my question has to do with the definitions, the new definitions for Division 7 on page 12 of 42 of our package.
Okay.
And on line 6, there's a new definition for member account, which specifies that member account means the regular member account by referencing the statute which established it. But then I couldn't see where the term member account is used anywhere in the division, or at least in the new rules. So what's the impact of adopting that definition for Division 7?
I think I would need to go through the entire division. So this rule defines terms for the entire division. So it could be in rules that are not included in this rulemaking. In Division 7 is all of the earnings crediting. So all of the Tier 1 and Tier 2 accounts have their own rules for earnings crediting. And in those rules, it's likely that it refers to the member account will receive earnings. So the purpose in adding just above that, the employee pension stability account, is to distinguish the EPSA and the IAP account from the member account. So I'm not sure, I didn't specifically check with the rules that we are presenting today, because the rules today are for annual earnings crediting generally, so to the reserves in the fund and to the EPSA account. So it would make sense that member account as defined here would not necessarily be in those rules, but it's probably in the Tier 1 and Tier 2 specific earnings crediting rules, and I can check on that for you if you want.
Okay. I'll just note that the current layout, the way the Secretary of State currently lays out the administrative rules, makes it difficult to do a search for an entire division. But thanks, Stephanie.
Okay, sure.
Chair Shinoy, that was my only question. I do request an opportunity to make a statement before we take a vote when we're ready for that.
Okay, any other questions? Please go ahead with the statement.
Okay, first of all, for the record, this is Steve Demarest, first board member who holds the seat set aside by statute for a representative member or PERS retiree. And I disclosed for the record that I am a PERS Tier 1 member. And I anticipate that if I make it to retirement, that I will be retiring under money match. And the statement I had to make has to do with the new rule that's included in this package, OAR 459-080-0400, which begins on page 40 of the 42 pages in our packet. So it's toward the end. And in particular, my comments are regards to paragraph 4. And I want to I recognize that this paragraph is consistent with another PERS rule, which was adopted by the PERS board following the Morrow decision, which set out how COLA reductions would be determined based on service. And I do think that rules, I do think the PERS rules should be consistent. So I wouldn't vote against this rule, but I do want to state for the record that I do disagree with the concept that for a money match retiree, that any of their pension benefit is attributable to any service after 2003. And that's the statement I wish to make. Thank you.
And Chair Shinoy, if I I do have an answer to Board Member Demarest's other question. Sorry, I just quickly looked up. Member account is used in the earnings crediting for in a number of other rules. There's 17 places in Division 7 where it's used for judge members, Tier 1 and Tier 2 account, member account crediting.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to have to show me sometime how you did that.
No problem. No problem. I'll do that, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie.
Sure.
Thank you, Board Member Demarest, for your statement. If there are any other questions from board members or from Stephanie or Kevin, please go ahead with them. If not, then is there any interest in moving to adopt all of the rules that have been outlined in this package?
This is Stephen Buckley. I'd make a motion that the board adopt the Oregon Administrative Rules adopting Senate Bill 1049 member redirect rules as presented in the board packet.
This is Jordan. Second that motion.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All, any nays? All right. So moved.
Thank you very much.
Chair Shinoik, Director Olenek here, if I could just make a, just provide an update as well, just to let the board know that last Thursday night, the functionality to enable the short-term pieces that were just passed with respect to having an EPSA account set up within the system and the ability for agency staff to do the member redirect was put in place, so we're happy with that, and it's all in place for July 1st, 2020.
That's excellent news. Thank you. Thank you. Anything else before we adjourn? All right. Thank you, everyone, for your participation. And we will see or at least talk to everyone at the July board meeting. Have a good day. This meeting is adjourned.